It's Tuesday, March 21st, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Orlando, Florida. Hello, and welcome to the second of three podcasts from today's SITE conference, which is the Society for Information Technology and Teacher Education. This particular session was held in the late morning and was titled Facilitating Effective Technology Research in the Core Content Areas. And this was a wonderful session because it brought together the editors of several leading educational technology journals who have been engaged in a dialogue with graduate students at several different institutions and now with the larger audience to try and help graduate students and others understand the research agenda, which needs to be advanced by the community of academe. And I think this is a very, very valuable endeavor because oftentimes, as I think Dr. Chris Deedy of Harvard has said and Dr. Glenn Bull of the University of Virginia has repeated, sometimes what educational practitioners in higher education do personally can prove to be toxic for the community professionally. In other words, we need to be engaged in work which doesn't only advance our own narrow academic goals and interests, but also advance the sort of broader research agenda and research needs that we have as educational practitioners. So anyway, this was just a great session. You're going to hear from Lynn Schrum of the University of Utah, Ann Thompson at Iowa State, Deborah Sprague, who's at George Mason, Cleborne Maddox at the University of Nevada at Reno. You're going to hear from Dr. Robleyer, who's at the University of Maryland, University College, Lynn Bell and Glenn Bull, who are at the University of Virginia. And anyway, I think this was a great session, and I really appreciated the opportunity to hear the panelists talk. And I will include in the podcast show notes a link to the actual SITE conference entry, where if you're interested in contacting any of these individuals directly, I think you can get their email address and contact information as well. So here's the session from SITE 2006 here in Orlando.
And then the overarching goal is the need to support and mentor grad students and new academics. I mean, maybe it's not overarching, maybe it's underframing all of this, but unless we have a cadre of people coming along, I hesitate to say this, but since Anita did, many of us are, you know, we've been around for a while, so we've got to have new so it's not really important, and I think I speak for everybody when I say that helping new people into the field and making sure they get a good start understanding how to create them for themselves a research agenda that's important is a valuable place to begin. Okay, come on. Why editors? Well, we read a lot of articles. We read tons and tons and tons of submissions. And people ask us, well, what if I did this kind of study? Would that be good? Well, of course, that's a non-starter in terms of being able to answer. But we do want to help new faculty and grad students. And then we've already established this in ways. Three universities have a video conferencing system that they meet about once a month, and people get credit for it, and it's a dialogue about creating a research agenda.
Soon to be four,
right. Right now it's the University of Florida, University of Virginia, Iowa State, and soon it will be George Mason University. Debbie's from there, and I'm soon to be from there. And we've got a blog that everybody can join. And Tom will tell us just a bit more about that in a moment. We've had panels at SITE a year ago here, NEC05, AERA05, NTLF last fall, and SITE06, AERA06, and NEC06. So if you're going to the next few conferences, this dialogue is going to continue. And that's really the goal, is to try and expand this conversation. I think Janet set us on the right track this morning when she said that we shouldn't be allowing other people to define our agenda for us, and I think this is exactly what we're talking about. Okay, so that's, technology, pedagogical, content knowledge, and I'm not going to go any further than that. I'm going to stop and so let me introduce Tom Richmond, who's going to tell you how you can participate right now in this conversation.
I'm Tom Hammond, and let me just show you where you're going to end up and then how to get there. Okay, so this is the blog that's for this conference. Janet used a different blog for her keynotes, but this is for general purpose, anything from the conference. And so for this session, if anybody wants to participate, you can end up there. This is how you get there. That if you are at the conference page, so the aace.org/conf/site/default, then there's a link here for Site Live. Okay, and what's neat about that is it links you out to basically an aggregator for a lot of other interactive technologies that we have going on. So, blogs, photos, favorites. And the very first link here is the Site 2006 blog. Okay, so if you click that, that will get you over to here. And that top thread is for this session. If you're live in the audience, please feel free to comment as a form of participating. If you have a question, however, go ahead and post it to the blog, but then please feel free to bring it up live as well. For anybody who's not in the room blogging, I will be watching for those, and I'll try to make sure that those questions that come in from people outside of the room have a chance to be brought up as well. So, that's it. Any questions about where it is and how to get there? Okay, thank you.
I want to mention that we're going to have for assistant professors and faculty students at 4 o'clock a fireside chat that Lynn is going to lead. And part of the context of that conversation will be things that you post on the blog both during this session and throughout the rest of the afternoon. So as you saw, how many of you were at the keynote? Okay, you saw there how Janet Clinton sort of set us on this path where we're looking for interactive sessions where you are part of the conversation. So if you just go to site2006.blogspot.com, you'll be in the site blog and you can contribute to this discussion.
Okay, each one of these panelists could probably fill an hour or more talking about topics in a good way. But I've asked them to just say a couple of words just so you know who is up here and what their perspectives are, and then we'll open it to questions and talk about how do we create this research agenda. Debbie, can I ask you to start?
I knew you were going to do that.
Well, you're sitting over there, right?
I know, and I'm sitting going, okay, what does she want me to say? Well, good morning. I'm Debbie Sprague. I am the editor for the Journal of Technology and Teacher Education, which is SITE's premier journal. So if you're a SITE member, you're probably getting it. It's a purple one. research agenda, is that what we're supposed to talk about?
In
content areas. Oh. Most of the research we're looking at for the JTA journal really focuses on the role of technology in teacher education. And we get a lot of research articles that deal with the role of technology for distance education, where they're really focusing more on the tool and not on the pedagogy of teacher education. And we don't get very many that focus on content that are from methods faculty. They do publish those in the SITE journal, which is the online version. But JTA is open to those kinds of articles as well, and we do get a few. So we really would like to see more research being done on the use of the technology to support the content and the methods for faculty in those areas and for those students, and not just from the IT people who are doing things and checking out how does the technology work. So I guess that's my blip.
And
I have one unrelated comment. I'll wait till the end for that one. But I was so interested in what happened this morning that, to me, that's an interesting area for research. And if I were a young researcher in particular, what happened in that keynote this morning, I think is something that few of us understand in detail, but was very exciting. In fact, I'll develop that idea and then go to the next. But as I was sitting in that audience, I noticed an engagement and an energy in the audience that is actually not very typical for those of us who go to a lot of conference and sit through a lot of talks, that there seemed to be more of a sense of responsibility there, that I need to react, and especially with Janet giving us this call to action, and then feeling as though I needed to do something about it. I found it to be a unique experience, and one that I certainly would be very interested in exploring and understanding in a little more depth. I think this sense of conversation in the background is something very new to a lot of us. Certainly people my age have definite difficulties multitasking, and at the same time, I know there's something very exciting going on. We do it in the seminar that Lynn talked about earlier, and one of the things that happens is we're having this seminar, we have three sites, we've got 10 graduate students from each site, and we're discussing these issues, and then there's this conversation going on in the background the entire time. And for me, that's exhausting. And in fact, the first time we did it, we said goodbye to Florida and Virginia, and I said, shoo, I was just exhausted from trying to watch what was going on there and handle the other discussion. We talked about it afterwards with the students, and one of the students said, well, it is demanding and a little distracting, and it's definitely worth it. Mm. And then what she went on to say is it gave her a voice, a different kind of voice than being one of 30 students in this environment. So that has nothing to do with our topic, but I'm so interested in it. And certainly, I'm the editor of the Journal of Computers and Teacher Education. And I think that particular issue, this issue of multitasking and helping our students develop abilities to use that kind of approach in their own teaching, is exciting and something that I certainly would be interested in looking at. In terms of what we're looking for in terms of the Journal of Computers and Teacher Education, our audience is quite similar to Deborah's. Our journal is sponsored by ISTE, the International Society for Technology and Education, and we're thinking mostly about issues of teacher education. I think one of the things that's certainly on the mind of a lot of research in this area right now has to do with connections to schools. Mm-hmm. At AACTE, Lee Shulman gave a very compelling talk, I think Lynn was there, I mean the rest of you were there, about teacher education. He was talking about research and teacher education in general. And the point he made is that we are very much in need of evidence of the effects of teacher education programs. And I don't think it's news to any of us that teacher education is under fire. We're seeing lots of alternatives in terms of preparing teachers. And Lee's talk was extremely well done and very compelling. And what he said is we need to be collecting evidence of what's happening with the students whom we prepare in their classrooms. And we tend not to do that. With all these years of teacher education, there's not a lot of evidence, compelling evidence, about the effects of teacher education programs. I think that message goes very directly to technology and teacher education also. I think we've moved from the time where we've done a lot of adoption and diffusion research, and it's very appropriately so, and certainly I've done a good deal of it, in terms of worrying about getting faculty using technology in their classrooms, getting teachers using technology. I think this next step now is understanding how they're using technology with students in classrooms in content areas. Mm-hmm. And not saying, does the geometer sketch pad affect student learning in math, but understanding how the teacher's using the geometer sketch pad and how also teacher education programs affect teachers' use of technology in classrooms. That's messy stuff. I know that the University of Chicago is doing some work in that area trying to understand this effect of teacher education programs on induction year teachers. For me, that's the most exciting thing we can be thinking about right now, and it's something that's extremely important to the field. And I'm hoping that together we can generate some specific ideas of what that kind of research might look like. I think Bob can help us a little bit because he's been involved with a project that's looking at that question in general. But I guess my statement, and I know this is more than a few years words, but I don't know how to do a few words. I'll be down in a minute. You can always cut me off. Is that we need now to move to the classrooms and think about the effects of our technology and teacher education programs.
Great.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. I'm Clete Maddox, and I'm research editor for Computers in School. I'm not the general editor, that's Lamont Johnson, who's unable to be here because of some family commitments. Before I start, except Lynn's comment about a few of us having been around a while reminds me of the story that something happened just before I got here. And my wife and I have been taking care of our 4 and 6-year-old grandsons while my son and his wife have been off on vacation, as a matter of fact. And Sunday morning, I woke up, and the 4-year-old was standing about that far away from my face. I don't know how long he's been standing there, but he calls me Poppy, and he said, "Poppy, am I going to look like you when I get old?" And I said, "Yeah, you probably are." I guess the one thing that I'd like to emphasize is that for a number of years now, in terms of research, I've thought that one of the mistakes that we make in teacher education in general, in fact, in education in general, is that we do all of our research and then we communicate with each other about it. And it never gets out there into the hands of the policymakers. And then we're absolutely shocked when we get policies that we don't like. And so, Computers in the Schools, Lamont and I had a conversation recently, we decided that we're going to try to do some things in this regard. And one of them is that we're going to emphasize outstanding contributions to integration research. And so each issue that comes out, we're going to identify an article that's an outstanding contribution to integration research. We're also going to require, for every research article that we publish, we're going to require and expanded implications for policymakers to be added to that article. We're going to have a website on implications also. That is a website that talks about implications from the research articles that we publish in the journal. We're going to recruit a volunteer doctoral student to take care of that. We haven't done it yet, but
why don't you do like the volunteer?
Goes around the volunteers. We're going to encourage people, too, to publish in venues that are read by others besides ourselves. Of course, journals for administrators, school board members. We've also talked to the PR department at our university, and they're very willing. In fact, they were eager to come and find out some of the things that we've been doing with the journal and then to try to get publicity for us. They promised to submit to a number of other venues for us. We're going to send copies of our research articles to school boards, principals, and teachers in the area, and we're going to solicit a cadre of teachers who are interested in action research. So those are a few of the things we're trying to do, and if you can think of some other things that we could do as journal editors, we would really appreciate that. Because we feel like that's the one thing. That's one of the things that we're not doing very well.
I'm sorry.
Clete Maddox from the University of Nevada, Reno.
Right. So just like, you know, in the program, it'll list all the... What we have here is a panel of editors of different journals. Tom, could you go to the site journal? And if you want to follow up with any of these individuals, I'm Glenn Ball, and I'm the editor of Contemporary Issues in Technology and Teacher Education, which is the online counterpart of Debbie's JPEG. And in the current issue of the Psych Journal, there's an editorial that all of the editors up here in front of you jointly wrote. It's www.psychjournal.org.
CITE.org.
www.
Got it. Need to redirect that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And now just click, if you would click View Current Edition and then click into the editorial. Mm-hmm. So over on the far left,
yep.
Go View Current Edition. And now an invitation to join. Right, click there. Okay, and so here you'll see all of the editors of the different journals who have written, and scroll down just a little bit. This started with Lynn Shrum's journal, the Journal of Research on Technology and Education. There was an editorial that was in the spring 2005 issue that really set the stage for a call for action, feeling that we needed to be a little bit more proactive in producing the research that the field needs if the field is going to be advanced. This is partly stimulated, we're freely acknowledged, by the external pressures, but we believe it would be a good thing to do regardless. Cleve, like most of us, sometimes crumbles, and that not everything that we get is at the level we would hope for. And Cleve and I were having a conversation, and I said, Cleve, who the heck trained these guys? And he said, oh, it was us. And so if we're not getting what we wanted, we're the ones really who are responsible. Now, I was, teasing a little bit, but not completely, because we really do, it's to the advantage of ourselves as a field to make sure that the next generation of research is as productive as we can make it. Typically what you do is you spend 18 months doing a research study, and then you send it in, it takes another 8 or 9 months to get reviewed, and then you get some feedback that says, oh gosh, get in a time machine and go back 2.5 years and do it this way. Mm-hmm. And that can be a little bit discouraging, especially if the tenure clock is running. Right? And so what we'd like to do is take a different approach and be a little more proactive. Now, I want to just mention a couple of things. First of all, you can go here, and this has links out to that original JRTE editorial, as well as several others that are collectively written by all the editors. We're viewing this as part of an ongoing dialogue. In other words, you're coming in the middle of the story, and as Lynn says, through SIG Tactile, a lot of leaders from the AERA, SIG, technology is an agent of change in teaching and learning. For those of you who are going to AERA, we'll continue the conversation. And then at the National Education Computing Conference in San Diego, we'll also have a panel. We're kind of in an ongoing conversation about this. The reason we're here is to bring you into the conversation, both through contributing to the blog as well as talking with the editors individually. I want to mention one other thing. There is a flyer in your packet that looks like this, and it says, Site Online, Live Blogging at the Site 2006 Conference. And this provides you with lots of entry points where you can contribute to this conversation. And in particular, I want to mention one thing that will happen later in the conference. Gerald Panizic, who is the chair of the Site Research Committee, as well as the SIG Tactile founder, has been working with Anita McAneer for what it's only been about, I think, 6 or 8 months, seems like a longer time, to identify an article that will run in the May issue of Learning and Leading with Technology. And Gerald and his compatriot and partner in crime, Ryan Christensen, have been working with representatives from all of the content associations to identify areas that they think are promising areas of research in math education, science education, social studies education, English education. So when Debbie and Lynn and Ann said, gee, we'd really like to see more things in this area, we're starting another conversation there as well. And we're trying to provide lots of entry points so that you can read where we are. But I should emphasize, we're not coming here with the answers, because frankly, we don't have the answers. We're coming here with questions in the hope that you'll help us find the answers, okay? And so we're just trying to bring everyone into the conversation to make sure that research gets done, it's timely, relevant, needed, and also that your time is directly spent, so the work you do leads to things that will be exemplary and will be published in the journals of these editors. And they're available throughout the country. You'll see each of these individuals sitting talking to some, there won't be a moment when they're not talking to someone. Usually that conversation, I'm thinking about doing this, and it's sort of a conversation along those lines. But you can also post this on the comments on the blog. Does that help provide kind of a context of what part of the plot we're trying to drain? I'd like to just do a special acknowledgement of Wes Fryer for helping us get all these blogs. Wes, just hold up your hand. And so if you have suggestions about how to make the blog more effective, just see the fellow in the red shirt over there. Don't ask us. We don't actually know anything about technology. We just always
Wonderful. Thank you, Glenn. Anita?
Also say that there's those of us in IT with a focus in a content area as well.
Okay. So, how many people would be in that category if you're in IT? Okay. That's good. Great. Thank you, Anita. One more comment, and that is that the National Technology Leadership Symposium that was held last September, our focus was on identifying some research goals, and three things came out as really important. One was that we need to understand teachers' beliefs about technology. We all believe that we think we know that teachers will not use technology unless they have some certain kinds of beliefs about it. Second was their practice, and third was student knowledge. And I think Anne spoke to that. We have precious little evidence that our standing creating rich technology lessons actually makes a difference in student learning. And, you know, we can all say, well, we're above that, we're too good for that, but the reality is we need that. So with that said, I'm done. We're all done. Did I promise you that they are hard to stop? But valuable, extremely valuable. So now it's your turn. Blog to us, raise your hands if you're in the room and ask questions. Create a dialogue. What's on your mind? Yes, Bob.
I want to thank Lee for his point about encouraging young researchers to orient toward policy recommendations for the research. I want to give a challenge to these students because all of those studies also have practice recommendations. I think it's wonderful that this I've been working with mentoring a couple of really wonderful young researchers in the last couple of years. And one of the things that I've consistently encouraged them to do is, in their concluding section, have clear, practical recommendations for both policy and practice. And I think that we all profit from that, because to conduct educational research, you've got to work with teachers to do it. So the practice is in there. The other thing that I want to raise, some of you that have known me for a few years know that in my heart I'm really involved in research for a big profession. But I've had to work on why I'm really different kind of course. And I want to raise an issue and then real quick sit down, because I want to ask what kind of research and what kind of evidence.
Great question. Anyone want to answer that? Again, I'll refer to Kelly Glassett, and I've done some investigation that we'll present at AERA, but basically what we found was that most of the people that responded to our survey and interviews are concerned about that question, whether they were qualitative researchers and now are using mixed methods, or feeling that they need to address the national requirements for scientifically based research. It's definitely on everyone's mind.
Yes, I'll take a stab.
Please.
At both of his comments, actually. First off, the JTAIT will not publish an article that does not include recommendations for practice. We haven't done policy, but we will include policy if that's where we need to go. Our reviewers consistently will send feedback back to authors saying, you need recommendations for practice in here for teacher educators. What can we learn from this study? So we do expect that in any article submitted to JTAIT. Regarding the question about policies, if you look at your site CD that came that has all the proceedings in there, there's actually several of us were asked to write an introduction to each of the sections that talked about where we saw the field and what were the pressing research questions. And I actually wrote one of them in which I attempted to address that very concern. What is good research? What methods would work? And talked about what kinds of questions should we be asking as a field in terms of research and in terms of technology. That is being republished in the JTAIT issue, in the next JTAIT issue, and will be republished in the Cite Journal. In the next issue of the Cite Journal. And it's the goal of it was to try and get a dialogue going that expands beyond this in our tapped in sessions. I lead a monthly tapped in session starting in April. We'll get started up again. That is designed to answer questions about how do you get published in the field. And one of the things we're going to start talking about is what is good research and how do you conduct that research issue. So I don't know if I really answered your question, but I at least put some more resources out there for you. But we publish either one.
And I'd love to hear
variety.
What is your thought about what's good research in our field?
One of the things I'd like to suggest is...
Do you want to stand up so everyone can hear you?
Certainly. Yeah, I'm a musician, so I apologize. is having a good literature base, strong literature base, an up-to-date literature base, a careful analysis of what is a good literature base, some of those kinds of decisions have to be made.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Absolutely.
Gerald?
Yes, I had an opinion, and I wondered if the panel agreed. It seems to me that for a long time, lots of years, maybe lots of hundreds of years, things that were regarded as relevant for doctoral dissertation usually indicated good research. They have many methodologies from all over, but we're all held to the highest standard by our peers. And so I was going to say rigorous is the end of what kind of research, perhaps. But I wonder if all of you agree, outside of what the current political movement is that a good sample?
Glenn, please.
Well, I do agree, and I would add something, and that is that my advice to the researchers, if you don't do anything that will limit your possible outlets, and I do see a bit of a tendency for some doctoral students that we've been working with lately to become polarized on this whole issue of quantitative versus qualitative, and that battle has been fought, and it's no longer joined in science, for instance. Those were called the science wars, and the two sides have agreed to either disagree or they've gone off to develop their own better ways of doing their own kinds of research. But I think to choose up sides and fight over this is the absolute worst thing that we can do. We publish both kinds of research, and we encourage our doctoral students to get prepared to do both kinds.
You know, I've heard it said that
when you go talk to a carpenter, you rarely get a carpenter that says, well, I'm a hammer carpenter. Then I'm your guy. Or I'm a saw carpenter. You know, if you need something cut out, I'm your guy. I mean, they just use the tool collectively. And so therefore, it's a little bit puzzling as to why we have people that say, I'm a hammer researcher or I'm a saw researcher. And if it involves this tool, then I, you know.
We've had these paradigm debates over and over again in academia, and some of us are alive long enough to remember the behaviorist cognitivist battles back in the early 60s. And I don't think there was anything, those aren't being fought anymore because we decided that we weren't getting any further.
I'd like to add that to me, I mean, some people are more skilled and talented or experienced in one way. But to me, this is the opportunity for collaboration. It's the perfect opportunity to talk to others who have other strengths and build on it. And most doctoral committees, but when you go to publish, you can always get someone else to help look at your work and add some strength, especially when once you're done with your dissertation and you're in the academy. That really is an opportunity. Most RPT committees, the promotion and tenure, don't want only single published articles. In fact, if you only publish single author, people begin to wonder, why aren't you working with other people?
So often there's a reason.
Well, that could be true, yes. and it is harder to work collaboratively, of course, but it's a greater benefit, too. So I would say that this is the opportunity that we need.
I remember Mary Cochran Smith a couple of years ago saying that she was talking in response to some of our national pressures in terms of the type of research we do. And what she said is, I know of no kind of research where you start with a methodology and then generate the questions. And that's really stuck in my head as we think about the issues for our field. And I think very clearly we need to start with the significant research questions. And then I think all of us need to have the tools to address those questions, and whether it's a qualitative approach or a quantitative approach or a combination, I think we have to think very seriously about not starting with the methodology. I worry about young researchers who say, I'm a qualitative researcher, that's it. I remember at a conference sitting next to, actually it was one of my students, and Henry Becker was reporting on one of his national surveys, and I think you all know Becker, and he's really just talking about means and standard deviations, very simple statistics. And she said, and it was very, very interesting, as it usually is, and at the end of it she said, I don't understand any of that quantitative stuff. And I was absolutely shocked because, well, in the first place, it wasn't heavy-duty quantitative, and it was a general intelligence in our field that I think we all have to have. We did take care of that a little bit, so by the time she graduated. But I think that polarization is a real mistake for any of us.
Yeah, I think more important than the method is what we're addressing. One of the things that Anita has been really good about is sitting here, and academicians tend to get in these abstruse conversations, but Anita sort of grounds us and brings us back to reality and says, well, aren't you interested in school? and aren't you interested in teachers? So I think the question that at the National Education Computing Conference was very eye-opening, because someone from the back of the room got up and said, I'm in my second year as an assistant professor, and I can run three studies with psychology majors who are required to do experiments in the time that I can go out to school and do one authentic study that says something about school-based learning, and I don't even know if I can afford in my career to actually do things that really are authentic and relevant, because when I go up for tenure, they'll just count the number. And I think that had an impact on all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, just to add one comment that I would say about that research base. It seems to me that one of the things we also need to recognize is that when we wrote a dissertation, most of us got the 50 best dissertations we could possibly find and we read them. And I would suggest the same thing for someone beginning a research agenda. Find the best mind and read what they've written.
Great, yeah.
I think that, having been in the learning sciences area for the past few years, put my heart in training to keep your ed, I would love to see more of a conversation on the learning sciences, teacher education, and the school, the things that cross the three threads.
How would you suggest we go about doing that?
Yeah.
Well, this isn't going to be easy, right?
No, it's not. I don't have easy answers either. I was involved in a project that Ann mentioned at the University of Illinois Chicago. With Jim Pellegrino and Sid Vanderbilt, and we are looking at, well, I'm not there anymore, but we were looking at the process of teacher education, looking at teacher education as a process from admission to coursework to field experiences to induction. And I think that's a nice framework in addition to the content areas. To look at things. And then we can talk about the different methods, what this all fits in one phase.
But I think what you're saying and what we're all saying is basically the same thing. Having the conversation about what are the questions in our field and then figuring out ways to address them could be, I mean, the first thing is, what do we need to know? What are the questions that we are being asked and asking ourselves? And I think one of the frustrations that I feel, and I think maybe I speak for some of the other editors, is that we get a lot of people's work that we can't even send out for review, or that we know when we read it is not going to be accepted because it's maybe replicating something that was done 500 times for the last 20 years, and we still don't know anything from it.
Although I should mention that we are hoping to see a few more media comparison studies.
No.
I have a standard blurb that I send to people who send me a media comparison study, and it says, you know, thank you very much, but... ladies, do you
want
to add something to that?
No.
There were some other hands. Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm actually a tenured assistant professor, and I appreciate all of your comments for the PhD candidate. The others, but fundamental to kind of follow up on Robert's comment, you know, the qualitative, that the individual who prefers or recognizes value qualitative, we're really kind of forcing the quantitative studies. As a consequence of grants, and I think I can speak to most of this when I say that we're generally underpaid, and the only way to really kind of make a go of it is to pull out a good grant, do a good study, you know, a valuable study, but it's not necessarily going to be calling the questions in my opinion that have heart, because the questions that input they want answered have to do with quantitative research about testing. So I'm not sure what to say about it, but to point out that this is in fact what's going on, mm-hmm. So we can kind of tie up, so to speak,
take it for what it's worth, but one of the things that also I kind of think about that is listening to things that have been out of IES and that kind of stuff, is that also the type of research that they want, they also want lots to do. And that's very difficult for someone like myself, who's just starting out, to do a longitudinal science, because by the time I get done, I will have lost my tumor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder how, what you guys' response is in terms of accepting, and how are you dealing with that, or what do you recommend?
So let's see if we can address both questions. People who want to.
I wonder what Cheryl
wants. Oh, Cheryl, great.
Thanks, I want to follow up, so I'll.
Oh, okay. Again, I'm going to come back to collaboration. And anything that gets a grant, I'd say, can also include a much in more in-depth. I mean, it can certainly have the kinds of things that might be necessary to get a grant, but it can also ask some questions, and you can spin off from what you're doing some other interesting aspects if you're more interested in the qualitative annotations to support what you're finding or what I try to do.
You know, I have to sort of follow up and give you sort of a pointer where the conversation is going. There is a blog, as Glenn mentioned, called SITEMENTOR, sitementor.blogspot.com. And on that blog, someone asked Glenn that very question. And I thought her answer was superb, because she essentially pointed out that a lot of times the only way to do some of the needed research is to have these connections between people who have a line of research going and finding somebody coming along who has a similar interest. But I think she expands on the answer she gave here. And I'll also mention that site, all of the editors are reading that site. And so if you have a thought that you would like a response from Cleve or Lindstrom or Ann Thompson or Debbie, just follow up there so we can keep the conversation going, because a lot of good ideas, essentially, these are all good questions. And there's a place where we can enter in more depth than we will this morning.
Okay, now Gerald has a comment, and then we'll go back to... Yes.
Okay, so I have an opinion, but it's just my own. First of all, you're right. I think it was... Is it Schneider who was the keynote luncheon speaker at PT3 on Sunday? Is that the correct name? Basically implied that one of the biggest mistakes we have right now at the federal level is the elimination of five-year grants, especially relating to technology. Almost everything you have is only three. Ron and I were commenting on that right now. If there's money at all, we can't do a longitudinal study for 3 years and do a good job of it. That's point one. Point two, I strongly feel that we have a crisis in administration in our universities right now. They don't recognize that it takes that long for you to do a good job. And therefore, you're doubly punished if you do. And even if you do a good grant, do baseline, and then you go through for 3 years, and then write it up. It's 5 years before it comes out in one of these journals. Somehow, especially when you're in the counting game, that 5 year effort counts just the same as 6 months for a quick article. And unfortunately, our problem is they even count the number of pages. We keep trying to say that.
No,
the distillation in learning and leading actually is more valuable than the summit. The shorter it gets, the more you should count it. Not the longer.
Right, and more people read it.
I know those of you who are qualitative don't necessarily agree with that, but that's my third point, my own opinion. Other than I have found over and over again in the past few years that quantitative studies will quite often tell us what's going on, but qualitative is required when we're talking about authentic classroom activities to find out why.
Yeah.
I just believe we have to change our policy makers' mentality. And I include administrators of universities in the policy making mentality to recognize that.
So great. There was a question over here. Please, I'm sorry. You may. You may come into anything if you stand up. But we worked with our IRB and have been really successful in getting it quick, less than 3 weeks sometimes, and also much more successful than it had been in the past. I mean, talking to an IRB, but that's like talking to, I don't know, I don't want to say Anne.
That's also an area where I think mentoring is extremely important, because I think the first time you come up against an IRB, It seems very daunting. If you work with somebody who's had some experience, I won't say there's ways around it, but there are ways to get through it, I guess, is what I would say. And I don't think that should keep us out of the classroom. We're seeing a lot of work with action research, and I know some of the PT3 projects are using action research as a way perhaps to get into the classroom with classroom teachers, and that's another possibility there. But I wouldn't let the art, this may sound, that it comes from experience, don't let the IRB stop you. They'll come back with something, but usually there's another way around where you can go back at it again. And I think it's so important that we do this classroom research that we just have to work together and share ideas on how to do that. And perhaps the mentor blog would be a good place to put some specific techniques in terms of IRB.
One of the things that we've done at the University of Nevada is over the years we've found that the way to work most successfully with IRBs is to work directly with the chairman of the IRB. And so none of my doctoral students are allowed to go and get the IRB cold. They always make a personal contact first. And we've been absolutely really pleased with the speed with which they've responded. And also, if there is some sort of a major problem, they point it out in advance so that it never does get to the committee as a whole to be voted down. So that personal contact, we've found, has been really important for the IRB.
You know, one thing about institutional review boards is that you know, the Department of Ed says that for broad classes of educational research is exempt, but often the university IRB is more rigorous than the Department of Education requires.
Right.
And so I think one thing we've recently done, possibly not to, but now we've got an exemption for broad swaths, and I think that may be something to work on strategically.
So it's an individual sort of thing.
Right.
And his question?
I'm from the Netherlands, and I don't think I want to do a lot of IRB. We are doing a lot of research in classrooms at my university, and I think one of the most difficult things there is that the schools or the teachers themselves benefit from your research, that you're not hopping in and out and out and, collect the data, and then they may be benefit from it. And particularly with technology, you can do that.
So actually, a great strategy might be to collaborate with someone in Europe where they don't have IRB.
There we go.
Put that on the blog.
A friend of mine said, if you haven't written about it, it hasn't happened. Okay, and she had a very successful career. She just retired. Anyway, I would say that we don't want to forget, because we have a number of people who are young scholars, that there's a value that comes in writing a textbook, a scholarship. Most of us wouldn't have gotten promoted to associate professor if we hadn't written the book, and the full professor if we hadn't moved along in that direction. So I would say research is good. Scholarship, broadly defined, is important to know.
Mm-hmm.
And it really depends on where you're trying to get tenure, I think. You do need to be strategic about talking to somebody who, talking to your mentor or the person is ahead of you to find out what's important in your institution. That certainly counts. I saw another hand somewhere. Yes, Bob?
I want to talk about money.
Money?
Money.
That's
we don't need money.
Issue that's come out in a lot of places. And I've never looked for funding for the technology research that I've been doing in various places. I've had to learn how to do, remember how to do the kind of research that I'm honestly worked on and been doing in my life. But the Institute for Education Sciences, for all of its purposes, is the only one in town. They have the money, more and more money than normally for the Institute for Education Sciences every year. If you watch their website, the number of RFPs that's coming out every year is larger, and
Okay. I want to, assuming your clock is right, tell you that this is only the first step for this week in this kind of dialogue. As Glenn mentioned, this afternoon at 4, we're having a, which I think is great irony, a fireside chat. Now, I flew here yesterday from snow, and we're going to have fire, and it's like 100 degrees outside. So I am enjoying it. But that's this afternoon, and then there'll be a discussion, and I mean, it'll all be discussion. We're just going to talk. ¶¶